Just lucky, thanks. I'll stand at the bar. I shouldn't wish to attract attention.
Unjustifiably in a position that I'd rather not be in. But the cream will rise to the top, oh yeah.
You're gonna eat lightning, you're gonna crap thunder.
We're friends to the end, remember?
You're unbearably naive.
Well, I was born yesterday.
I'm gonna make this pencil disappear.
Ta-da! Swallow this.
Long live the king.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
Anyway, my name's Lewis.
I'm Jamie.
And we are who we are. We work for the Con. We're the Angry Geeks. And the reason why we're angry, Kishio yells at me all the time, and I make her angry. So don't let the name fool you. And we're your moderators for the panel tonight. And we're going to bring in the voice actors, okay? So you guys might know them, you might not know them. Oh, little guy, you don't want to sit up front. All right, David Sobolov. So David's coming up. Big round of applause for David. Next, we're going to bring in Jamie Marchi. Come on in, Jamie. After Jamie... Jamie... Not Marty. Get back there, Marty. Go.
Did you introduce me yet?
I'm trying to introduce Jamie. Get out of here, Marty. My God. And next, we're going to bring in Ray Porter. And then, should we bring in T.C. Carson? Because I'm not sure if T.C. Come on in, Marty. We'll bring in the voice of Courage the Cowardly Dog, the one and only Uncle Marty, Marty Robinson. And is T.C. here yet? Or is he still with the boy? Is he still? No. All right, well, T.C. will make his grand entrance soon. Anyway, this is your voice acting panels. If you guys have a question, okay, line up over there.
Is this the horror convention?
No. Okay. No, you know when the horror convention is. Behave, or Jamie's going to... My Jamie, not you. My Jamie will take care of you, Uncle Marty, so please. Yeah. Oh, I know, we know. So anyway... If our audience members have a question, please line up to the mic right over there and ask away.
So please, oh my God, we have a, yes.
Yeah. Very, very short. Well, you know what, Jamie? My Jamie.
Sorry.
So we're going to go my Jamie and then we'll go Jamie. Okay? So let's hand it over to the audience first. What's your name?
Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Okay. Behave.
For me. There's other people on this panel.
No, I'm gonna go under.
All right. Marty, you have to behave. Okay.
But that's half the fun if he doesn't. I was hoping he wouldn't. Don't ruin this for me.
What are the ramifications if I don't?
Okay. Okay. What was it like coming back to voice Courage for the Scooby-Doo special, and how did it like come about?
It was like a dream, really. Because people have been saying, you know, when is it going to happen? Are you ever going to bring Courage back? And they're still saying that now as far as the series goes. But what's happening? Okay, I thought you were singing. I saw the,
do you want?
I saw sign language going on. I don't know what was...
He wants you to pitch low on right. Outside.
Oh, you know, is it too? Okay, but it was very, I'm trying to behave myself.
I know,
here.
And you're doing very well.
Thank you. It was such a wonderful thing. It really was a dream when Warner Brothers gave me a call and said, you know, we want to bring you back. Though I will say it was a little anxiety ridden because, when they said we really want you, it's not an audition, but we need you to record a few snippets of you doing Courage. So just in case, you know, we just want to make sure you can still do it. So I kind of had to put it together and do a few snippets and make sure I went up real high with that. You know, the whole thing. And then I said, yes, I got old, but I can still do it. Gosh darn it.
Did you guys do like a group recording for that, or was it individual?
No, it was one-on-one. Isn't that another question? But yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
You we'll pay for that.
No, it is.
Where's the line?
No, we did do one at a time.
What are you, Charlotte Flair? No, yeah, they do one line. Just turn around. There's a guy behind you.
Okay. No, God bless you. Well, I'm playing with you. Yes, we did one at a time. We did one at only even one person in a booth.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. What's your name?
Isaac.
Hi, Isaac.
Hey, so quick question. I was kind of curious. What's the best way? So I do like voice recordings for like YouTube videos and whatnot. I have like a Shure 7MB microphone, goes through a Scarlett. What's kind of like, if you want to like try and audition to voice acting, is it just like submitting voice samples to Backstage? What's the sort of formal process? Or is it better if you go with like a voice acting coach, do a couple of sessions, and then they send you on the right way?
Well, it took me 11 years to get my career going in Los Angeles. So just so you know, a couple of lessons probably isn't going to be getting you ready for substantial work. You need to learn how to act. You know, we're not just doing voices. We're actually playing characters.
Ladies and gentlemen, G.C. Carson. You have the habit of being late. You have the habit of being late. Our other Contropolis show, Massachusetts, somebody was late there, too.
I wasn't really late. I was the last person on the day.
David, continue.
It's definitely a journey, and you start with just learning how to tell the story, really. And the way I do it, I see voice acting as an on-camera performance in your head. You have to see everybody and everything that's going on and make sure you're not reading. You have to see the eyes of the person you're talking to. When you start a speech, think of what happens before. What made you say those things? It's a lot to learn. So I would encourage you to take a little bit of time at least. You know, find a good coach. There's a lot of people out there that teach remotely. And just take a little time and study a bit. Because, you know, the first impression is very important when you're sending stuff out to agents and to casting people. And you want to make a good impression.
And I guess another sort of quick question. Do you have, like, your own studios in-house, or do you, like, go to, like, recording booths when you record auditions?
Auditions are almost always from home now, especially since the pandemic. We all had to spend some money and have really good quality, because when you're auditioning now, it's not only your performance, it's the quality of your sound. They sometimes need to use that at home, you know, and they don't have you go to the studio at all.
Well, thank you for your insight.
You're welcome.
Hi, what's your name?
Deanna. This one's for Jamie. What was it like voicing Junko? What was it like voicing Junko? For those who don't know, she is a character with like 10 personalities. And so that's what it's like. That reaction is exactly what it's like. It is really fun to just be able to play evil, which is super, I don't know, relaxing. So, being a villain is always going to be a good time, and then also one that has so many personalities and is manipulating in such vicious ways. Oh, it's so delightful. And I think because of that, people usually they think that I might be that way. I'm not the nicest person in the world either, but in comparison, people think I am. So I like that too. But no, playing, finding where all of these different personalities were coming from, was inspiring them, stealing from your friends 100%. It was a blast. She's one of my favorites.
Also, out of all the characters that you voice acted for, which one has been your favorite?
It's my favorite. So what I always say on this one is that I'm a Libra, so I'm really bad at favorites. It's true. I'm terrible. But also, now, I know a lot of people will say, all of my characters are like my babies, and I can't choose them. I feel like after 300, you have favorites. I feel like after 5, you have favorites. Truly, 2. You'll have one favorite at some point. Anybody else feel like that? Yes. It's like, you're my favorite right now because you're listening to me. But with those, I have so many that are favorites for different reasons. You know, like, currently, I'm a writer for Gearbox. I would not have that job if I didn't voice Ellie in Borderlands.
Yeah.
I got to do Hand in Stocking with one of my best friends, like, swearing at each other. That's just fills your heart with joy. offending people. Delightful. And so there's so many different reasons. I have, you know, probably 20 that are rotating of my top 5 or 10, right, that I just love for so many different reasons. Some of them personal, some of them because of the work itself, some of them because the fans maybe taught me something I didn't know about that character. So there's just a lot of different reasons to like them, but I don't just have
Thank you. Ray, where did you find your voice for Darkseid?
It was under some rags at Marty's house.
come on.
I love it.
It was like low and slow of a hermaphrodite.
I know, right?
Anytime you bring me into the picture.
Oh, happy to do it. That'll be 10%. It was, it just seemed like the right choice, basically. Looking at the character and in the context of the script and telling the story, as you were talking about, it just seemed that was what was appropriate. And I didn't struggle for a long time trying to find the voice. It literally just happened the first time. I mean, basically the way I got the role was Zach held up a photo and said, "What do you think he would sound like?" And I went, and I did it. He was like, "Cool." And then I didn't think anything of it at all. And 2 weeks later, somebody else came and went, "Oh, you're playing Darkseid." Okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Hi, what's your name again?
How you doing? My name's Daniel. Mine's for Marty, of course. He already knows me from earlier. I'm one of his biggest fans. Like, literally, I live an hour and a half away, and I traveled all the way out here by Uber just to meet him. So,
wow.
I'm spending a lot of money just to see him right now. Like, I don't.
But you know, my wife wouldn't do that.
I literally
Thank you for that.
Yeah, this day is all about you, Marty. So I have like 2 questions, if that's okay. So going on like what he said earlier about the movie, because I'm like still confused. I know like a little bit about it, but so with the movie that you recently did with Scooby-Doo, John R. Dilworth was saying he wasn't a part of that. I don't know if you're allowed to say it, talk about that or not, but like was he like allowed to like. Had like the permission, or like did he like just kind of get stolen from him? I don't know. That's like too much to ask.
It's kind of mysterious, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't really have an answer to that exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that I recall, mm-hmm. the only thing that I know that I've heard more than once.
Yeah.
And I've heard. I can only speak to Dilworth himself.
Yeah.
That he said. That they approached him,
okay.
and he was lukewarm on the idea of a crossover, because he, and I believe him on this, because he's really a very temperamental an artist in the true sense of the word, and he felt that when you do a crossover and try to embrace two universes at the same time, you know, both universes are bound to suffer a little bit. To a certain extent. So his thinking was, you know, he doesn't like crossovers, so yes, he'd like to do a Courage movie, period. And why don't we do that? And so that's my knowledge, my understanding of how that went down.
Okay.
But of course, there's all kinds of,
well,
I think it might have happened this way, that way. So it keeps the mythology alive.
I mean, I saw his post on, like, Facebook, and it was like saying fans were asking, and he was like, he gave like such a like broad answer. So I just wanted to like know, like, I know like he's very strict with his work. Like, I'm glad he's like that, because you know, I don't want Courage ruined.
He's a real artist.
Yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from with the Scooby-Doo thing, because like the movie was good, you know, but it's like it was not Courage, it was more like the Scooby-Doo, but with the Courage universe, you know, in my opinion.
I think that was a victory.
Yeah,
I felt that they honored Courage pretty good.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Any of you who did care about that, I was pretty happy with it, you know?
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. The movie was great. I'm glad it came out.
And it took place in Courage's universe, so I thought that was kind of...
Yeah. And second question, so this one's more like, interesting to me, like, from the old show. After the first season, you stopped talking as Courage, right? So... Because I don't know why, but, like, they stopped, like, doing a lot of the voice scenes and stuff for him, because I guess he was talking too much or something. But, like, did you do, like, the mumbling and the screaming? Like I'm guessing you did, right? Like, but like, how did you do, like, the screaming, like, and all that stuff when you voice acted? Is it, like, was it, like, hard to do all that, or?
Okay, I'm going to choose that the last moment is the actual question. And so, yet, it was not hard for me to do it because whatever I got to do yeah. this thing, and I kind of already had the character in mind, in place, so just minus a lot of the words, but keep, communicate without words. Like this lovely gentleman over here, Sobolovsky.
Sounds like a sandwich.
The bottom line is... I needed to know and be clear about what I was doing and who I was doing it with without words. So it was still, the acting still had to be there.
Yeah, that's crazy. But the screaming was hard? Or like, because that has to be strenuous on your voice eventually, right? Yeah? Awesome, I appreciate you, Marty. Thank you.
All right, man.
You know, I want to interject something about screaming. If you scream in character, it doesn't hurt as much as if you just scream. Because you're experiencing an emotion, and you're more relaxed when you do it, I found.
Jesus. Before we get to our next audience question, this one's for David and TC. Video games, animation, or movie? Because you got one of the hottest movies out right now, Transformers. What do you guys prefer to voice over? Which one? Which one do you prefer more? Video games, movies, animation. What do you like?
Well, I mean, like, what's our rate?
Yeah.
That's
theater.
Theater. Okay. Because like you'll always be Kratos to me, always. You're Lobo.
Tell Sony that.
Yeah. It depends on the character.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know. You're always going to be Lobo.
Well, yeah, that was fun. But it depends on the character. You know, I really prefer movies of all the things I do. I love, you know, live or like the Grodd character I did in The Flash.
Yeah.
Because when it's a live action production and you fuse a voice into it where they've thrown a CGI character into a live world, the challenge of making it seem real is great. And also, you're hoping the actors are going to buy into it, too, the on-camera actors. And most every time I've done it, they have, because you know that's their job, of course. But it's hard. And to know that we've never met, and we're doing it in isolation, and still have to sound like we're talking to each other, and that we care about each other. There's a scene I play in the Transformers movie, this character called Apelink, at the beginning. It's very emotional, very connected. But I never saw him. It was all in isolation. And in fact, the lines were constantly changing. So I was trying to make sure it sounded heartfelt, and I built a backstory in my head about it that wasn't in there in the script. And it worked. And I think there's brilliant editors and a great director that I was like crossing my fingers that all those random lines I had said that tried to, in my mind, I was putting it together as if I were the director in a sense. It all worked in the end. I was very happy about it.
I think that's what you have. Voice acting. Put it all in. You're a crazy person, really. You have to visualize every single thing. It's usually just you. You don't necessarily have, if you're doing anime dubbing or any kind of dubbing, you'll have that animation there, but you don't have other actors with you. You don't get time with the script, really, a lot of the times, video games, and a lot of animation working on. So it is really just in that moment you bring everything you have to the table, and it's all living. So you're just there saying your lines on the mic, but nobody knows how fully crazy you are.
You have to make it feel like it is something going on, even if you don't even know. Yeah. I did an episode, what was it called? Not The Punisher. What was that show about the blind detective on Netflix?
Daredevil.
I did an episode of Daredevil where there was so much secrecy and so much, just everything was like embargoed. They wouldn't tell me what scene I was doing. They wouldn't tell me what part I was playing. They wouldn't tell me who the other character was in the room. They just gave me a speech and basically said, go, good luck. Because they didn't want to reveal what it was, which made it very difficult. It was literally like I was doing a performance and he would give me an adjustment without giving me any direction really at all. Like, that's good. It's almost like hot, cold, that game. It's such a weird way to work, but that's the way it's
going.
But
because that is largely, I mean, that happens a lot.
Yeah,
it's the stuff you were talking about earlier about take acting classes, do plays, understand story,
theater,
that kind of thing. Theater. That is what is going to stand you in good stead when you're handed, here's a block of text, do something, good luck.
Make a choice.
And you have to, like, fill that, you know. Being able to be facile with a bunch of voices is about that deep, and what they're looking for is a real depth of performance.
One last thing, and I'll give up the mic. I'm not trying to hog the conversation, but I did a movie once. It was a Dungeons & Dragons movie called Dragonlance many years ago with Kiefer Sutherland and Lucy Lawless. I was supposed to go in and do an incidental character, small thing, and they decided to give me the lead villain on the day of lead villain. They gave me a 30-page contract that I never got to throw through my manager or my agent. That's fine. I did all that. You know, we just talked to my agent on the phone, got it all worked out, but they had only scheduled an hour for this session. I had never seen the script before. It was a feature film, and I'm the lead villain, and there's no script. They didn't care. They said, you have an hour, and there literally was no time. She would go, okay, page 47, line 120, take one. And who am I talking to? And she had to give me line readings. There was no other way to do it. She only had an hour.
Yeah.
And this was supposed to be a theatrical movie in the theaters, and it was so horribly done that they went straight to video. And at the end of the session, the director said, you probably never want to work with me again, will you? And I said, I want to work with you again, but I would like you to give me the opportunity to do a great performance for you. And I don't feel I had that opportunity today. It was okay. It wasn't my best, but I mean, I was in the dark.
Well, it's your best in the situation.
Yeah, exactly. But if I was just doing a voice, I would have been lost.
Right.
You have to know how to act.
Yeah,
and it's just so much harder than people think it is.
Yes. Yep.
And that too. Saying line read, that means the director, she's telling him exactly how to say the line. And if you're not an actor, you'll impersonate that voice. So can you imagine him impersonating a woman's voice to do his character? That's just kind of naturally what happens. If you were an actor, it would have been interesting.
Well, thank goodness that she actually was a pretty good actor.
Yeah,
so I understood. But I had another, again, not hogging, I'll stop real fast. There is a video game, and it was an art director. They didn't give me, like, a voice director. He had no idea how to act. He was giving me line readings. I was just at one point, he was getting mad at me because I couldn't match what was in his head. And I just started directing myself, and then I was fine.
Yeah. You've been so patient over there. Hi.
What's your name? I'm so sorry to keep you waiting.
Yes. You got a question for David Sobolov?
Yeah. I think he's had the stage for enough.
What's your name?
Oh, Lewis. So I guess my question is kind of a general one for everyone on the panel. Not necessarily your best-known character, but your favorite character. What line comes to mind for that character, and could you possibly perform it for us?
Well, all right, let's start with TC.
No!
Yes! We're not going to give him the mic again. No, it's got to start with you.
What happens when you come late?
Wow. So again. Let me get that. Okay, fine.
Make believe it's
fine. Whatever.
Favorite character has got to be Kratos. Only because I used a lot of my personal journey in voicing that character. I was not a happy person during that time period. And Kratos allowed me to be nasty in me and get off. favorite line. Let me think about that. I'll come back to that.
Since in the voice of world, this is my only major character in the world of animation, as opposed to, you know, sharing a stage with all these wonderful voiceover actors that have done so much. So I'm going to say Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Of course.
Is my favorite voiceover thing. And my favorite line would be, all the things I do for love!
That's, yeah, kind of the same boat, really. Most of my stuff has not been voice. Dark Side and, I don't know, probably...
Ready the Armada.
I just got chills. Thank you.
I still don't have a favorite character. But All my favorite lines I can't say in front of.
We only have, how many? The little. I think the little guy is gone.
Yeah, there's an 11-year-old.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Wow.
Come on. Do it, cover, and no, wait, but you're, how? Okay, all right. So this is one of my all-time favorite lines. So what happens if I just accidentally blew the janitor?
Well, I do love all my children equally. I was happy with Grodd a lot. I really loved Grodd. Grodd was interesting because it went over the course of 9 years, and we actually grew the character with the same director over 9 years. His intelligence changed. But I think the beautiful line from that series, if anyone remembers this, that's a good line. Yep.
Hey, Jude!
Caitlin, always kind.
Jamie.
Okay, fine.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was done. I was just like, wait.
No,
I was going to give him an out. I was going to give TC. I was going to give TC an out. So my Jamie said, no, TC's turn.
Vengeance is mine!
Worth the wait.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
What's your name?
My name's Mia.
No, move closer to the mic.
My name's Mia. What show or movie did you enjoy acting in?
Oh. Do we go you or do we...
Fine. I really enjoyed Voice in Cradles, like I said. But I really enjoyed my time on Living Single. Enjoyed working with all the cast, with the family. I think that showed up.
I am...
Oh, hold on 1 second, Uncle Marty. This is an escape... Oh, you beat the escape room. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get in the way of the comedy.
Was there a comedy?
It was about the escape room.
Yeah, the door. That door doesn't lock.
All right, have a seat, my friends. Go ahead. Come into our. All right, I did a. I just over the past year have begun to send around. I did a short film that I produced and starred in, called Hunter is Fucked. And it's about the great artist, the great writer, Hunter S. Thompson. And it has been in 17 film festivals. It's been going around. And I got to play the great Hunter S. Thompson from Rolling Stone magazine, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And for me, that was absolutely the most joyful experience. Because he was kind of a badass, and like Jamie said, it's fun playing badasses, right? So it was a very great experience for me. And it's going to be on YouTube, shameless self-promotion. It's going to be on YouTube within the next few months. We will be posting it. Keep an eye on my page if you happen to be following me, and you'll know how to watch this thing.
If we are not following you, where would we go to follow you?
Oh, Marty, bless you. Marty Grabstein Courage on Instagram and on Facebook, and I do have a TikTok account. I'm ticking and talking.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
There's a lot that I always manage to have a really good time with anything that I do, but I think I probably have an especially soft spot in my heart for Almost Famous. That was really dear to me and the best summer I ever spent.
My God, I didn't know that.
Did everyone see the light bulb?
It's great, man.
Yeah, it was a good. It's the best summer I ever spent. Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, anything that I've done. I mean, I always really like doing any Shakespeare, but I think you grew up doing stuff like that. It's always a part of you. Even as a writer, it's like, I've got to write a line about this, and something Shakespeare pops into my head. And it's like, how can I steal? Steal from the best, you know what I'm saying? but I will say today, in this moment, Junko Nishima from Danganronpa. But in like 2 seconds, it might change.
Yeah, I'm already thinking about it.
Right. But also Fairy Tale. I really love Kana.
And I mentioned The Flash earlier, I'm doing One Piece right now, this role of Kaido, and I'm having a great time. Oh, yeah? She's in One Piece, too. What part do you play?
I have like four.
Oh, cool.
But the two I remember are Miss Valentine and
Shin. Cool. The thing about One Piece is it's insane.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen one episode after another. I could be menacing and serious. I could be crying. I could be laughing. I could be drunk. I love... He's nuts. So he's a great character.
Thank you.
Question. Thank you for the
Thank
question.
Thank you.
Question.
You have a question? Yeah, go ahead.
You had another question. I didn't want to interrupt.
No, what's your name?
Kira.
It's
my first time ever to a con, so
thank you.
I have two questions, and they're both kind of general. The first question is, I know that the writer's strike going on doesn't really affect animated shows, but it does affect the writing process of that, and of course with the authorized strike for the SAG as well, I was wondering how that was affecting your morale, or with animation as it's kind of, as you say, sometimes you're just by yourself in a booth. How has it been kind of, as a community, being responding to it and kind of what you feel about that in general? Because not only is it affecting animation, but it's affecting, you know, live action and everything else as well. So that's my first question.
It's hard. There's a lot of sacrifice. And, you know, writer's strike, there's tons and tons and tons of people who are represented by other unions, but what are called, you know, the slang term basically is below the line. So you've got costumers, gaffers, grips. All these people are out of work too if nothing's getting produced.
Right.
So it's very, very hard and it's difficult. And at the same time, it's not the fault of the union that this is happening.
No, definitely not.
And so you make sacrifices, but it's for the greater good. It's for something important that should have been settled 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? So it sucks, but it's important.
And my other question was in regards to, as the animation has kind of flourished over the years, and there's been a lot more, at least for my only exposure to it, a lot more avenues, a lot more ways to express your own signature voice into different characters. With animation sometimes being kind of solo, was there any mentor that you were able to find, or was there anyone that you have really been able to take under your wing and mentee to be able to help guide them in ways that you wish you were guided as animation can be so vast? As you guys said, you have hundreds of credits each, so it can be hard to kind of do that. But that was just my other question, because I know how important that is.
Well, I don't want to hog the mic, so go ahead, anybody. Well, I helped Ryan Levy when he was first starting out. He's in Chainsaw Man, and I'm very proud of him. He's done amazing in the last just 4 years, and he's become very successful. Daniel Ross, who's here at the convention, I did his first demo 20 years ago, and I'm very proud of him, too. I studied with Sanford Meisner, who was a famous acting teacher in New York many years ago, and if I didn't study with him, I wouldn't be here. Because I wouldn't be telling any stories. I would just be doing a voice, and nobody would have hired me.
I talk to high school kids a lot, and they always want to talk about getting into voice acting. I think they just be on their phone and on the voice acting. So you have to take a class and understand beats, understand pace, understand how to tell a story. And then maybe you can decide to get voice acting. So really talking to young people, explaining to them that there's more to it than just talking. And, a lot of them didn't realize that. They didn't realize they could take a class. They thought they could just get on and, you know, I'm going to go in, my voice is great, and I'm going to jobs. No. You have to take a class. You have to learn the craft to do it.
I just came up with more question. May I please ask it?
For $13 trillion for each one of these.
Okay. Do you take Venmo?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Is that the question?
Nice.
Yeah, that's your question. Thanks so much. See you later.
Sounds good. My last question was, what themes or backstories do you wish were expanded upon or maybe taken a second glance at with in regards to your character or their story arc? As you had mentioned, you had like an hour to do that one voiceover. But if there's something that you just like, it's almost like it was just gone too soon in terms of being able to expand it upon it. Or maybe years later, you like chat with someone and you say, oh, there's something that maybe not what I could have, should have, but there's like, it's just something to expand or add on to that.
I mean, yeah, I'd love to expand on the character I did in Justice League, but I won't name names, but it rhymes with Horner Druthers has some drama.
Yeah. I've heard there.
Was that, nobody knows what
nobody
that is,
knows.
Right? Okay, good. Thanks.
Their Yelp reviews are pretty bad.
But it's, you know, it's one of those things. There's so many things that are out of your control, you know. I mean, I'm accustomed to, I did 20 years of Shakespeare. I'm accustomed to live theater and that, you know, immediate sort of thing. And you're kind of packing your own chute and you're doing all of that stuff. And then moving into film and television, and that there are so many moving parts. And you have no control over anything other than what you are doing in the moment when it is time for you to deliver. So it can be a little confusing. I mean, yeah, there's a ton of things that I would love to explore, but I have to be allowed to do that.
Thank you for coming out and making the time. Appreciate it.
Great questions.
All right, I have a question. We're going to start, let's see, we're going to go with Jamie. Ray, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, because you kind of answered it already. We'll go Jamie, TC, Marty, and then David. Each one of your characters, how do you find the voice for each one of your characters? You play a lot of them. And you're one character. You're like schizophrenic. You have like so many of them. How do you find a voice for each one of your characters?
Well, I don't usually start with the voice. Start with the intention. What is this character's intention? What is this personality's intention? And if I am trying to make, you know, that personality is trying to make the characters feel safe, then that's the goal. Trying to make them feel scared, I'm trying to make them feel loved, whatever those intentions are directs that voice. And then, of course, too, if it's anime related, you kind of hear Japanese. But so you take those inspirations, take those intentions, and then allow that to shape the voice. But it starts with character. And it's the same thing on stage. And then the director comes in and is like, oh, let's try this, let's try that. You should definitely really shape it. That's how I start.
Thank you.
Same thing for me, like intention is all of it. Usually when they ask you to audition, there is a certain sound that you already have that they like. So it really is about, can you deliver the meat of the scene and make them believe with your voice that, you know, these words are true. And then from there, like you said, the director comes in and he'll tweak it to get it closer to what they want. But it really is about, are you able to deliver the intent?
Now, for me, it was, you know, a curious thing, I guess, in that the creator, John Dilworth, had been auditioning for upwards of about 4 or 5 months, and he'd heard over 300 voices for Courage, and a friend called me up and said, I'm working for this guy, he's driving me crazy, he's developing this new cartoon series, Courage the Cowardly Dog, and he can't decide, he's heard all the greatest voiceover talent in the city, maybe even some of the people on this panel, possibly. No? All right, whatever. And so he said, and she said, come in and maybe we'll score with something. I had no understanding or expectations of what it was. Sometimes things are just at that moment, and it's you hit something. It's like kismet, you know? And I just walked in, and I just knew he was a very terrified dog. And I just went with kind of my own herky-jerky way of speaking, you know, talking like this and that and that and that, and he was loving it. But, you know, and then he said, this is great. You know, something was going on there. But can you just pitch it really high? Which I have a kind of a deep, throaty, raspy voice. And I went, up here! And he goes, yes, that's it! And it was just, that was it. It was just somehow a light bulb went off, and it happened. So it was a wonderful moment in time.
My turn? Okay. When I did Sabrina, the animated series, many years ago, I played this character called Spooky Jar. They had gone through every other actor they could ever think of. No one thought of me, and they're like, oh, let's call David. And they wanted someone from India, and I don't have that in my wheelhouse as an accent that I can do. So I decided that this was a genie that spoke in haiku only, in rhyme, and I would just take Agnes Moorhead's character from Bewitched and use that. And for some reason, that approach to her incantations was exactly what he wanted. It wasn't at all what he thought he wanted, but I gave him a new idea. He jumped up and down, and I was recording episodes the next day. In that case, that's how I found my voice. Or it's provided immediately.
For you young people, Bewitched was a TV show starring Agnes Moorhead, yes. And what was her name?
Actually, it was Elizabeth Montgomery.
Montgomery, yeah.
Dick York.
Yes.
No, many years ago.
That was the movie. That's what we had to clarify.
Wow.
I mean, it was 50 years ago.
It's the moderns. It's the young folks.
Yeah. Well, we only got 5 minutes left. But before we get to your question, I just had this thing in my head. What if Kratos, we had a crossover of Scooby-Doo and Courage, but I started giggling. What if Courage met Kratos? Jamie, wouldn't it be funny?
It would be.
You wanted the money.
No, what would you
have? I don't know. I didn't even know you. I'm happy to hear it, though.
I think Kratos would look at Courage and go, it's a dog.
But I love you.
It's a dog.
Are we acting or is this real?
You're still a dog.
I know. And I don't know how to end this.
Yes. Oh my God.
We did it. We acted. See, so belong. We're acting.
Lovely.
That's what you get when you come to a Contropolis show. What's your name and what's your question?
Hi, I'm Andrew, and there's like a lot of controversy with like AI being able to like take someone's voice and replicate it, and I just wanted your guys' thoughts on if that's okay for like memes and stuff, or is it like not all right?
That's some bullshit. That's some bullshit.
I mean, I go to an audition and I'm up against like amazingly, incredibly talented and imaginative people. That's hard enough. Now I'm also up against a friggin' toaster. No.
Now you're also against the toaster being you.
Yeah,
right.
No thanks.
That I don't. And the thing is, people might think it's just a harmless meme, right? But if it's your voice and you don't agree with that meme,
that's
right. If it's your voice and someone who, I don't know, maybe threatened to kill you online is using that meme, yeah. You know, so people don't take into consideration what our voices mean. And so it's not just my voice, it's part of my identity and who I am. Yep. So when people take it and use it for whatever they want, they're taking a part of me. And I'm not okay with that. Not without my permission.
And they're putting words in our mouths.
Absolutely.
We didn't voluntarily say we wanted to, we didn't agree to say any of those words.
No.
So it's a problem. And the Actors Union may just, we'll see, they may go on strike next week. We'll find out. You can't copyright AI. You can't copyright AI, which will help a little bit, but what they're doing is they're doing these memes now where they'll take a scene from something, right?
Yes.
And they'll use our voices and they'll parody it or something and make us sound like idiots.
Yeah.
And they seem to never even take them down when you complain. They
right.
leave them up.
And I don't understand why, because you have, what is it called where they change the faces? Deepfakes, right? Everybody knows deepfakes not good because that could take us a real bad direction. AI with voicing is the same thing. So you get deepfake and a voice, suddenly you are starring in a video you never agreed to sign to star in. And who knows where they take that. And then it's what, we don't have the rights to our images, we don't have the rights to our voices, we don't have the rights to the people that we are. So then we are just forced to do what they want us to do. Like that is, it's just really dark.
Yeah, it's so dark. And to me, I have to ask, you know, I mean, not necessarily the people in this room, but in like a rhetorical question here, which is, what is it about people in the world today that are so starved for really quality stuff or something original or something that has something to say that they have to somehow, that's all they can do is technically throw together something that already existed and try to squeeze it into something that makes, you know, gives them some pleasure. I just don't understand where the pleasure is. I can't, I'm too old for this. I can't understand it.
All right, unfortunately.
Great question.
We don't like it.
Yeah. We don't like it.
Some bullshit.
Great question.
First, I want to apologize. I feel like David. I never gave you the mic for a question, so sorry. I do it all the time. No, I'm going to get yelled at probably later. Anyway, first, round of applause for everybody on the stage here. Second, make sure you go to each one of their tables, even if you already have. Go buy an autograph, get a picture, say hello, all right, show them some love.
Saying hi is free, by the way.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, so always feel free to
yes.
buy and say hi.
Yeah, just and smile and have fun and enjoy the rest of the time here at Contropolis, New Jersey, okay? Thank you, guys.
Been watching the Angry Geek Show on Pod TV. Visit our website today. And for guest bookings, email us at theangrygeekshow@gmail.com today.